In this part of Focus 580, we'll be talking about relationships between fathers and their children. And our guest for the program is Dr. Warren Farrell. He has written a book on this subject that we'll be talking about. It's titled Father and Child Reunion. The subtitle is How to Bring the Dads We Need to the Children We Love. The book is published by Tarcher Putnam. He's authored a number, some of them sold very well, including Women Can't Hear What Men Don't Say and The Liberated Man. Also others, including Why Men Are the Way They Are and The Myth of Male Power. He is on the boards of many fathers' organizations. He is the only man elected three times to the board of NOW, the National Organization for Women in New York City. He's taught in the School of Medicine at University of California, San Diego, where he's taught psychology, women's studies, political science, and sociology. He's also taught at Georgetown, Rutgers, Brooklyn College. He has done many, many interviews like this. He's even been on this program before. And we're talking this morning about some of the issues that he raises in the book. And, of course, as we talk, questions, comments are welcome. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. So we'd welcome calls that way. And, of course, if it would be long-distance call for you, use the toll-free line, 800-222-9455, and there we'll pay for the call. So, again, locally, 333-WILL and toll-free, 800-222-WILL. Well, Dr. Farrell, thanks for talking with us once again.
Looking forward to talking with you again. I enjoyed our last interview some years ago, I guess it was.
Has it been that long?
Well, it's been a couple of years. Right.
To begin with, maybe one of the most basic questions you ask, and perhaps that you deal with, and perhaps one of the most controversial things, perhaps one could say, it is the prevailing wisdom, the conventional wisdom, the presumption that women are better parents than men. And if one had the choice, if you said that the kids were going to live with one or the other, either with mom or dad, and you had to pick one, we have for a long time now just been assuming that, well, mom is better. Living with mom is better than living with dad.
Yeah.
And this is something that you take head on. And in fact, you say, you know, not only is that presumption wrong, you actually say that there is evidence to support the argument that if you had your choice, it would actually be better for the kids to be with dad.
Yes. First of all, I want to make it clear that this is not the findings I expected when I started Father and Child Reunions research. But it's also not a contradiction between the my findings don't say that men are better fathers than women are mothers, but only that the type of men to self-select themselves to be fathers at this point in history, overcoming the social, psychological, legal barriers to become fathers, those types of men are very much like, let's say, the type of woman who would have become a surgeon or a doctor in the 1950s. In order for her to become a surgeon or a doctor, she would have had to have more motivation than the average woman in the 1950s to do that. So she, if we looked at the her competence level and her effectiveness, the chances are fairly good that she probably would have been at least as competent or a more competent doctor than the average male doctor because of all the barriers she had to overcome to do that. The same type of thing seems to be true today, that the type of man who cares enough to become a father, goes out of his way to do that, is on the opposite end of the spectrum of the deadbeat dad. But what I didn't expect to find was that the children not only did better with him, but it really isn't even close. There's 27 different parameters of measurement that have been looked at by the best studies, and they're not only in the United States but overseas as well. And those 27 incorporate all the academic disciplines from math and science right down to reading, literature, history, and so on. And then it looks into also things like health, how often have the children been absent from school, goes into things like empathy, social skills like the ability to distinguish assertiveness from aggressiveness, how well the children get along with other children, how well the teachers perceive them. And then to me, one of the most fascinating findings was that single mothers were far more stressed out and likely to have health problems and stress difficulties themselves than single fathers that had. And so it just brought up a whole series of of questions for me, which is that, you know, maybe, or let me put it this way, one of the things that was happening when I was interviewing single mothers and single fathers was hearing over and over again from single mothers that they were economically distraught and fearful at the time of divorce, hearing from single fathers when I got close to them that they were emotionally, they just felt like in a vacuum. And then the data bore that out also, that men who divorce, whether they're fathers or not, are 10 times as likely to commit suicide as mothers, as women who divorce. So we have sort of some evidence or backup sort of corroborating data that a man at the time of divorce is in a very emotionally distraught position. And one of the things that I think that Father and Child Reunion is saying is that maybe the country should consider at least creating the option of the children being with the father for a couple of years after divorce, if there has to be divorce, and that might give the woman the economic some time to build up her economic muscle and not have to be dependent on the man, and conversely, it might give the man some time to emotionally connect to his children, feel needed and wanted. And one of the things that we know about suicide is that when people feel needed and wanted, they do not commit suicide.
Hmm. If it is indeed the case that children do better with a single dad than with single mom, how much of that do you think you can attribute to dads being financially better off?
Yeah, very good question. There's probably about two-thirds. When we... children do considerably better with single fathers, but when we control for both education and income, they only do slightly better with single fathers. Probably the remainder of the difference has to do with two things. One is there may be some style differences that work out. There are some style differences. How much measurement? It's hard to measure those in terms of impact, but two other things that we do know is that one again is that the single man, the single father, is not the average guy, and then fourth is that the single father is far more likely to keep the single mother involved than the single mother is to keep the father involved, and that doesn't mean that's nobody's fault. If you talk to the single father, if you talk to the single mother, she says that the man doesn't want to be involved, or he gets involved in his work, or he gets involved with a new woman those children, or he's just a deadbeat. If you talk to the father, he says, well, I do get involved with another woman because I don't have any love for my wife, and I don't have any love for my children because my children are bad-mouthed toward me, and I go to pick them up, and I have to spend half the weekend penetrating the veil of hostility that they feel toward me because of all the, quote, things I've done, and I don't feel able to talk back to them about explaining my perspective because I don't want to badmouth the mom. So you get different stories from the mother or the father as to why the father is more likely to keep the mother involved and why the mother is less likely to have the father involved. But in essence, when you have a single father, the bottom line is that you're more likely to have two parents involved, even though the single father is primarily the one to be involved.
If you look at this more closely and you look at the gender of the children, how then do you see things breaking down in terms of how well kids do? That is to say, okay, so you got single mom and single dad. If the children are boys and girls, do boys do better with their dads, with their moms? Do girls do better with their dads, with their moms? Or does that seem to make any difference?
Yeah, it's an excellent question because the belief has been until recently, or until the belief that I thought when I entered in the book was that the sons probably do better with fathers and daughters probably do better with mothers. And if push comes to shove and you have to have some type of split, which is not usually good either, probably that would be the way to do it. That didn't turn out to be the case in both the United States and overseas. Both the girl and the boy children did do better with the fathers. But the girl but certain areas were more distinct. For example, both girls and boys did better with very much better with fathers in the areas of math and science. The girls seemed to do better in the single quality that seemed to make the most difference for girls was the amount of hangout time that they had with the dad. When a mother, for example, would move a child, say, from Illinois to New Jersey for for a job in New Jersey, that would have a very powerfully negative impact on the child, because the one of the problems that a lot of dads have when they see children is they tend to be very do-oriented. They'll go to a movie, they'll go to Disneyland, they'll go to be in the audience of the Oprah show. They'll do something with their children, whereas the take them to a Chicago, you know, Cubs or Bulls game or whatever. But that doesn't seem to work as much for girls as it does as just being available to the daughter. Like, say the daughter's doing homework and the father's doing his own work, but in the same room or right next to the daughter, and conversations are likely to come up when they're going into the kitchen and getting some yogurt or whatever, and it's not when they're doing something per se. When you ask the daughter, you know, how was your day, she's likely to give you a short answer. When you just sort of are around her for a while and she feels secure and that you're not going to disappear an hour later, she's much more likely to have something trigger her memory and then bring it up voluntarily. And that's a really important message to dads, that if you want to be involved with your kids, don't just be involved on the visitation level. And it's important for judges to hear this too, because oftentimes judges will give the first priority to sort of, like, you know, live with the mother and the father visits. That doesn't seem to work well for either boy or girl children, but it particularly works badly for girl children.
Our guest in this part of Focus 580 is Warren Farrell. He's the author of a number of books, big bestsellers, Women Can't Hear What Men Don't Say and The Liberated Man. And the book we're talking about this morning is titled Father and Child Reunion, the subtitle How to Bring the Dads We Need to the Children We Love. It's out fairly recently, published by Tarcher Putnam. And questions, comments certainly are welcome. In Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222. 9455. I'm curious in exploring again some of these differences in what it is men as compared to women bring to parenting. And in fact, I think in the book, one of the sections of the book poses this question, what do fathers do with children that's different from what mothers do?
Yes, a lot of things. One, let me just clarify one thing. I realize that I've been off on the single father, single mother issue for a while here, and so that if anybody's just tuned into the program, let me make it clear that it is both children do best in the intact family, and they do second best in the joint physical custody situation, that is, where both the mother and the father have a lot of access to the children. And it's only third and fourth best that are the counterintuitive findings, where the children living with single fathers do better than children living with single mothers. But back to your question about what they do that's different. Example, father is much more likely to be a risk-taking, mother much more likely to be protective. One of the reasons the children do so, and here are some of the implications of that, fathers are more likely to set boundaries quite differently than what mothers do. So, for example, a mom will be more likely to say a quick no, like, you know, if they're going shopping, you know, don't take that off the shelf. I'll take care of it for you, or whatever. And then the child will tend, after the quick no is said, to talk its way out of the no, and the mother will sort of break down on the boundaries. Her initial no will become a maybe and then a yes. Whereas fathers tend to sort of talk a little bit more about it to begin with, like, why do you want to take the, you know, the Wheaties off the shelf, or, you know, why do you want Wheaties or whatever, and then it will go back and forth, you know, eat your vegetables, and then the child will negotiate it more up front, and then once the father comes to a conclusion, it's not arguable nearly as much with the dad after that as it is with the mom. What that seems to lead to is the better boundary setting on the part of the dad seems to lead to a very counterintuitive finding, which is that children who grow up with single dads are more empathetic than children who grow up with single moms. One of the guesses that I'm suggesting there is that when good boundaries are set, the child begins to know that my needs, desires, and wants end here, and somebody else's begins there. Part of my job in life is to think of somebody else's needs besides my own, and that's the beginning of empathy. So that's one example. Another is the roughhousing issue. Fathers are far more likely to roughhouse. Mothers are more likely to say, you know, sweetie, the last time you were roughhousing with Jane, Jane fell and hurt her head. Don't do that again. Do it in a softer place, or don't do it at all. And after a while, the father will feel restricted and not and do it less and less. But studies are showing us that children who have been roughhoused with are not more aggressive. They are more assertive and less aggressive. And what seems to be the reason is that, like, let's say the daughter is, or the son is, you know, getting ready to punch the father in the eye or pull the hair. The father says, no, you know, that level is not acceptable. You have to stop there. And the leverage that the father has is that if you don't stop there, we won't be playing anymore. So after a while, the child gets a sense as to where that excitement cannot lead to just whatever it wants to do, or anger or upsetness can't lead to whatever you want to do. You have to draw boundaries, and that constant playing seems to help the child not only draw boundaries, but also to know the difference between assertiveness and aggressiveness.
Well, it looks like I thought we were going to get some callers lined up. Maybe I'll give the telephone numbers again. If you're here in Champaign-Urbana, where we are, 333-9455. That's the telephone number to call. Also, we do have the toll-free line. That's good, anywhere that you can hear us. So if it would be a long-distance call for you, the call will be on us. That's 800-222-9455. And if you match the numbers with the letters on the phone, you get WILL. 333-WILL, and we also have that toll-free line. That is 800-222-WILL. I think we'll start out here with a caller, someone locally, on our line number one right here. Hello.
Yeah, hello. I'm a father who's gone through a divorce and with three kids, and came up with this visitation rights every other weekend and on Wednesday nights, and it was totally unacceptable. And has experienced what you call this post-traumatic divorce syndrome that fathers experience. Have you testified on behalf of fathers during a custody battle? I know that's not the best way to deal with these issues.
Yes.
Promoting your theory before a judge? Because my experience in this whole matter is not only with the judge, but also with the lawyer representing me. When I even broached the issue of custody contest, they just looked at me like I was as if I were crazy, asking for custody as opposed to the mother.
Well, yes, I do expert witness testimony, and B, you are absolutely right on both counts. One is that even the lawyers are very unfamiliar with this data, so they, and then thirdly, to speak from the lawyer's perspective for a moment. In a sense, he's trying to give you, or she's trying to give you, the reality. And the reality is that the great majority of judges, that men virtually have no rights in this area. That is, if the woman wants the children full-time and the man argues for full custody, for the great majority of the time, it's very difficult to get that unless the man has an extraordinary amount of money to spend on the process
right. In
hiring lawyers. And that part of what I've been finding in the research for Father and Child Reunion is that that's a lose-lose for everybody. It doesn't work for the kids. The mother is often economically distraught and pulled between the trying to do some work and take care of the children. She needs a break from the children. The father needs contact with the children. The children need contact with the fathers. It's just a lose-lose situation. But judges don't know this. They really do believe. Judges are trying to do the best they can, and they really do believe that the children are doing better with their fathers. And the reason I decided to publish the research for Father and Child Reunion was because I was seeing that it was just needed to straighten out what was really an inaccurate situation.
Yeah, one follow-up. I know you may have other callers. Is that you raise a point that's really startling to me. I mean, I have three kids, two boys and a girl. The one they said that least needed me least was my daughter, and you seem to indicate that daughters really do need to continue this bond with their fathers.
Yes, I'm glad you pressed that point, because here are some of the outcomes of daughters being more involved with dads. One is daughters that are less involved with dads tend to either be, when it comes to puberty time, tend to either be too sexual or not sexual at all. They move to one extreme or the other. They don't know how to be appropriate with boys. They don't know how to draw good boundaries. They either try to get boys' approval by being sexual very quickly, and therefore they're far more likely than any other group in the population to have children out of wedlock and prematurely before they even want the children. And then second, they are, conversely, they are fearful of men and sort of back off and are paranoid and they just don't know how to be appropriate and balanced and, you know, draw good boundaries with men. And secondly, the girls particularly seem to benefit from the hangout time that I was mentioning. Here I'm a little bit strict with dads on this issue because I think you heard me say that a lot of dads tend to do things with their children, but when we set up visitation types of structures, that sets up a mentality of, I will come and visit my child and I will do something with my child. It really, the best arrangement seems to be when the father has a great deal of close and easy access to the child and the mother does too, and the children spend a significant amount of time with the dad and the mom and feel that they can go back to the dad's and mom's house easily, pick up a book that I left there, pick up this that I left there, that they have easy access to both if they must be separated from the other one. So these are really revolutionary findings, and they're very, you know, that we need to inform judges of these, and it is very difficult being in your situation. You're caught at a point in time where the lawyer is being right, is right in advising you that it's a difficult situation and not just taking your money and running, so to speak, with a losing situation, but it is changeable. I have seen judges be informed and educated, and then, as I said, the judges want to do what's right for the kids also.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Well, sure. Thank you for the call. Let's go to another local person here on our line number two. Hello.
Hello. My question basically was referred to in the first one, but I was wondering if he knew any statistics on the number of teen pregnancies that come out of, like, single mother families as opposed to when the daughter is living with the father instead, because it seems like most of the teen pregnancies that you ever hear about, they only live with their mother and the father's not involved in their life at all.
That's exactly the case. To the exact data, I have a lot of different breakdowns in father and child reunion, but without remembering the numbers exactly, there was one of the most powerful studies was a study in Baltimore that looked at children that had contact with their dads versus those that didn't. And of the children that didn't have contact with their dads, something like 60 or 70% of the females in inner city Baltimore had children out of wedlock. Of the ones that had a lot of contact with their dads, zero had children out of wedlock. I mean, the gap was just enormous. I may be a few percentage points off on the numbers there, but the children that had contact with their fathers, the daughters that had contact with their fathers, a lot of contact with their fathers, the 0% is correct, and the 62.3%, I'm not sure exactly where in the 60s that is, but I think you get the picture, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So it really has an impact. I mean, if we really want to work on Planned Parenthood and children and daughters getting along with dads, I mean, getting along with men well, probably the best single thing we can do is to focus on increasing father involvement. And as I mentioned, so many women are so, you know, they care about their kids and they want to be with their kids, but they're so overwhelmed between the demands of them work-wise and also never having a free moment, which, you know, children full-time leave you without a free moment, especially if you're doing it single-handed. Does what I'm saying make any sense to you?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, thanks.
All right, thanks. I just, in reference to that last, the study that you talked about, I guess any time that we talk about human behavior, we tried to reduce down to very simple sort of straight line explanations. I sort of think, given the fact that human behavior is very complicated, there are so many variables, I am really leery of any kind of study that says one thing leads to one other thing. So when you, for example, you say you have a study that says that there's this big difference in teen pregnancy when the single parents are either fathers or mothers, that just makes me so uneasy, just for the reason that I've
Absolutely. First of all, it should, because correlation and causality are two different issues.
Exactly. Just like my old psychology professor used to like to try to tell me.
Yeah, exactly. And one of the differences in father and child reunion, I really try to be very cognizant of that. So One of the things I do is look at studies that control for education and control for income. And the issue here, when large studies of elementary school children were looked at, particularly from urban areas all across the country, and an income was controlled for, the findings were that the children did better with dads from lower income environments than they did without dads from upper class, upper middle class environments, which is really, again, very powerful and telling. The less astounding finding is that children with dads from weaker schools did better in school than children with dads from without dads from excellent schools. So that the impact of education and income had less power than the impact of father involvement. So a lot of what we, you know, a lot of our assumptions are really going to have to be looked at. We've often been assuming that because so many problems come out of people in poor areas, that the lack of education and income was the issue. We're finding more, at least the findings in Father and Child Reunion that I've been able to put together have really found that the single most important controlling variable when everything is controlled for is the involvement of the father. But I very much agree with you. As soon as you hear a single variable and you don't get those controls, then you've got to make some real careful, you've got to look more deeply.
We are a little bit past the midpoint here. Let me again introduce our guest, and we have other callers. We're speaking this morning with Dr. Warren Farrell. He is the author of a number of books, many of them books that sold very well, including these titles, Why Men Are the Way They Are, The Myth of Male Power, and Women Can't Hear What Men Don't Say. The book we're talking about here this morning is titled Father and Child Reunion. The subtitle, How to Bring the Dads We Need to the Children We Love, published by Tarcher Putnam. Warren Farrell has formed many, and I mean hundreds, of men's and women's groups, worked with a lot of men and women different places around the country. He has taught at the School of Medicine at University of California at San Diego, as well as other places, including Georgetown University, Rutgers, Brooklyn College, American University. He's done a lot of speaking, lecturing, given many interviews for radio and television. Questions here are welcome if you'd like to call in. All we ask is people just try to be brief, and it becomes a little bit more crucial as we get closer to the end of the show. But all questions, comments are welcome. In Champaign, Urbana, 333-9455. Also, we have that toll-free number. Go to anywhere that you can hear us, around Illinois, Indiana, any place the signal will travel, 800-222-9455. The next caller is in Crete, Illinois. This is line number 4. Hello.
Dr. Farrell, I appreciate your kind of thesis or kind of theme to the general view about women and males, et cetera, and children.
Thank you.
But I have a counter theme to your theme. That is violence. I studied this fairly well, I think. And as you well know, men are much more prone to violence than women are.
Absolutely.
So what we would say on the counter theme would be, one, the increase in child abuse, sexual, verbal, and more especially physical, as well as sexual. Maybe verbal might be a question mark. And the other would be the child terror or killing of children. As far as we know throughout history and up to the present day, males are much more prone to do that to children and anybody else, for that matter, than females are. So when a judge appears in court and finds a situation in which all things are equal, he might well look at statistics and say, well, I'm going to give it to Mary because I see, Mary, that you are much less likely to damage your child physically or verbally or psychologically than Joe here, mm-hmm. all things being equal.
Good question.
How would you counteract that?
Yes, for sure. First of all, men are responsible for more sexual abuse of children than women are, about 60-70% more. Men are also much more likely to be violent toward other men. But when it comes to children, child abuse is 62% of child abuse. If you average the studies, 62% of the child abuse is from mother to child, which is partially understandable because the mother spends more time with children as a rule. The killing of children is much more likely to be done from mother to child than it is from father to child. But we're only talking about hundreds of cases per year, as opposed to that being a common phenomenon. It's not a common phenomenon, killing your child, but of the hundreds of cases that happen per year, it's about a 2-to-1 ratio of female to male on the killing. In terms of verbal abuse, it's much more likely to come from mother to child than it is from father to child. In terms of hitting, as I said before, that type of thing is more likely to come from mother to child. Now, even when the amount of time is controlled for physical abuse, when single mothers versus single fathers are with their children, then the single mother is more likely to physically abuse the child than the single father is. Remember that the single father is more likely to be better educated and have more money. So that's, as David and I were talking about before, you have to control for those issues as well. But when in intact families, often the mother will say, wait till dad comes home when there's a big conflict, and then sometimes the father will be expected to give physical abuse to the children. But when the families are separated, that is, when there are single moms and single dads, the mother is more likely to lose it and hit the child than the father is. The reason for that appears to be the boundary-setting issue that I talked about at the front of the program, that the mom will say a quick no, and then the children will try to talk their way out of the no. The mom will get frustrated. The frustration level will rise, and eventually she'll yell at or hit the child, whereas the father will tend to sort of negotiate a bit more up front, make a firm no, and the children, and there's no room, and after a while the children don't argue with the father nearly as much as they do with the mother. So all the images that you are talking about are accurate images. That is, it is accurate that those images are out there, but most of them are not accurate when the data is looked at.
What if you factor in the male's, the father's girlfriend coming into the situation, or as a substitute mother, and
the stepfathering, or if you have a male as a stepfather, there the relationship between the stepfather and the stepdaughter is usually filled with more tension than probably any other relationship.
That's what I meant to talk about, that if the woman brings in a lover or a...
Oh, a lover, yeah. The male lover of a female who's a single mom,
right.
There's oftentimes, that's where the sexual abuse is likely to be the highest under those circumstances, because you have a more visceral attraction between the male who may be, like, say, 35 years of age or 40 years of age, let's say, and a daughter who's becoming 15 or 16.
Exactly.
There's a dynamite situation there that oftentimes does lead to sexual abuse difficulties, and oftentimes there's conflicts between the mother and the boyfriend and the children, and the father is typically feels that the children are getting too much of the mother's attention, and the mother is too permissive with the children, that can be a fairly volatile situation one of the arguments actually against mothers being single mothers is that the single mothers tend to bring in the boyfriends, and then that dynamic between the single mothers and the boyfriend and the children,
yep,
is the toughest of all the dynamics.
Thank you.
All right, let's go to next Aurora on our line number 2. Hello.
Good morning. Yes, I thank you too for this program. I wanted to know, what do you say to a child with a father that does not give the child any attention? The father is 5 hours away and does not make any, well, in 2 Christmases he didn't send a Christmas gift. And what do you say to the child about her father's behaviors? I mean, more to, not to be antagonistic, I mean just to...
I know, I understand. To help assure the child that,
yes,
there's not something wrong with the child is what you're getting at, I assume. Is that correct?
Yes, yes, that's what I... To,
yes.
To pacify her, to quiet her, to give her some assurance.
That, yes. The first thing, I got involved with a woman some years ago who had exactly the situation. Her ex-husband lived exactly 5 hours away, San Diego versus San Luis Obispo. When I finished the first draft of Father and Child Reunion, I sent it up to him. He read it, and long story short, this is some 2 to 3 years later, he is now, she built a extension onto her home. He has moved back into that extension and just so that he could be more with the children. Part of what happens is that dads don't know how important they are to their kids.
And I appreciate, yes, I know that. So that's why I'm asking.
Yes, and so the first thing you can do, I mean, you can give assurance to the child, but as you and I know, if the child is seeing behavior that belies the assurance, the child will see through that and, you know, and sort of not really believe the assurance, if you know what I mean. And so the first job is to let the father know how important he is. The second job is to make sure that the connection between you and the dad is one that allows him to have a different method of fathering than you would be likely to approve of. He might be more lenient or more restrictive in certain areas, but he has to feel that he's not being an employee, so to speak, of yours, or like that his methods are not worse than yours and being judged by you. Most fathers, when they feel that, if they feel that way, they start backing out of the parenting process. Let me ask you one more thing. Is he involved with another woman and children?
No.
No. Okay. That's a big issue. If he's not involved with another woman and children, you have much more hope than if he is involved with another woman and children. Give me some more hints as to what the relationship is like between you and the and your ex.
Well, to clarify it, I'm the grandparent, and I often have the child in my home.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the father is a very important. If the father is good or not good, it's still an important relationship because it's their relationship between each other.
You're very right about that. Even when the father isn't great, it's better to have the father involved than not involved.
Well, it's a learning experience for the child. As poor as it is, it's a learning experience.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what was your question? You wanted to know.
Yes, I was thinking that you were the.
No, I'm sorry if I gave you that impression.
No, that's not a problem.
As a grandparent, I want to try to promote something good.
Yes, between them.
So what do I say? So I just kind of.
What is the communication like between your daughter and your son-in-law or your ex-son-in-law?
From his standpoint, very poor. And I guess, and I always ask it, would you like to write to your dad? I'll help you write a letter.
Mm-hmm.
I don't ask, did you hear from him? Because I almost suspect that no, she didn't. She never talks about him.
Do you have communication with the dad?
No, I can't. I can't.
Are you restricted from it?
No, I just can't. I'll just let it go. I'll try to be brief, like David says.
Yes.
It doesn't matter, but I can't communicate. I had thought of writing a note, and then I thought maybe it might boomerang and cause my daughter a problem, so I didn't. So my main thrust is, what do I say to this child? That's why I'm asking you that directly.
Yes, yeah. And I'm hesitating on the answer to that because the children see through any gap between what you say and what actually is happening. And so I would be giving you sort of a glib, simple solution that wouldn't really work with the child, if you know what I mean.
I'm glad you talked to me. Maybe I could just give her the empathic response if it ever comes up. That's the best thing.
The empathic response for sure. I really do also encourage you to get a copy of Father and Child Reunion to your son-in-law. Maybe he will read it and see for himself the importance of what he has to contribute, and invite him to communicate with you directly. And so, if lines of communication can be opened, normally speaking, when I speak with dads and why they don't get involved, unless they're really the worthless 5 or 10%, but normally speaking, it's a feeling that I don't have a real say. I've tried to be involved. When I am, I'm told I'm wrong. I'm blocked out in one way or the other, and therefore, and I've just plain given up. And what dads usually in that case need is some sense of, or the child has been bad-mouthed to, and the father feels that there's a filter of anger that he has to work through the first couple of days that he's with the child, and then by the time he does works it through, the child's back with the mom again. Those are usually the things that keep the dad away, but again, in this particular circumstance, I'm not sure whether those apply or not.
Thank you much.
All right, thank you. Our guest in this part of Focus 580, Warren Farrell, he's written a great deal and spoken on topics including the relations between men and women, men as they rethink what it means to be a man, men and their relationships with their children. He's written a number of books. His most recent is this one we've been talking about here. It's titled Father and Child Reunion, and published by Tarcher Putnam. And questions are welcome. We have about 6 or 7 minutes perhaps left. We have a caller here locally. We'll get right to. Others, welcome. 333-9455. Toll free 800-222-9455. This caller here is local. Line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yeah, I was wanting to know what Dr. Farrell's name was.
It's Warren Farrell.
Warren. And was there any way to get in contact with you from week to week?
Yes, I have a website which is warrenfarrell.com that has all my info on it, like my email and my address to write to.
Okay. My question dealt with the age of decision, as far as I know, was 14 as to where they live or not. Earlier you'd said that there was, unless you had a lot of money to go to court, I was wondering how you felt if your child got to be 14, wanted to come and live with the father as opposed to a mother. Do you still think it would be an expensive court battle?
If the child wants to live with you, and there is a lot depends on how resistant the mother is. Is the mother open to that?
No.
No. Is she vindictive, meaning is she likely to accuse you of child abuse or false, or former spouse abuse or some type
already
of...
Already has.
Already has. That's one of the biggest... If you've been accused of that, do you have good evidence that you haven't? Would the child testify that you haven't done anything like that?
Well, I've had DCFS clear me twice.
Okay,
that's
very helpful. It's judges are often scared when there's an accusation, even if the accusation is false, because if even once in their lifetime they make a mistake about that, it could be the end of their career. And this is, this is one of the real major things that needs to be countered, is to recognize that that there's a fairly high level of false accusations during custody battles, and it is sort of what I call the nuclear weapons of the divorce situation. It just basically guarantees that the mother can end up keeping the children. But if you've been cleared and you've already gone through that expense and process and survived it, meaning that you haven't committed suicide or something else like that, which many men just about feel ruined at that even at the accusation,
right,
even if it isn't true. And so it's, congratulations to you for really enduring that and moving out the other end. And if your 14-year-old child wants to live with you, then I'd say you have a reasonable chance if you have a reasonable amount of money for lawyers. I would say that wouldn't be needed if your wife was agreeable, but I would communicate with your wife about the importance of dads. Many, many moms genuinely believe that the children are better off with them, and their anger to you is translated into believing that that you wouldn't be any good for the children anyway. And some moms are penetrable. They're able to see something, a different perspective of that, just by giving them information. Others need to be fought with in a more legal way.
Right.
But I hope the information of father and child reunion will prevent her from fighting you on the issue. But if it doesn't, then certainly contact me through the warrenfarrell.com.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks. We're just about the point where I'm sorry to say that we're going to have to stop. I think one thing that certainly we know that As I think as a result of the women's movement, a lot of men have started to rethink, as I said before, they rethink this whole idea about what it means to be a man, what being male is all about, and parenting certainly is part of that. And as a result, I think we have seen that now fathers, particularly I expect guys who were in the, say, 20 to 40 or 20 to 50 age range, are more involved with their children than their fathers were. And that's something we expect to see to continue. And I guess if you could talk a little bit about what you think a long term, and unfortunately we only have about a minute, the implications of that trend continuing would be.
Yes, first of all, I very much agree with your assessment. And I think we will see, to move it into trend terms, the 21st century, it'll take pretty much all of the 21st century to bring fathers into the home place with not just full responsibilities, but also full rights. You never get full responsibilities taken by any group unless you have them share the rights to the outcome. So we will be seeing that movement in the 21st century, just like in the last quarter of the 20th century we saw women move into the workplace. We'll see men become more integrated into the home place. It'll be a slower battle because we have a protector instinct to rights that women want. We don't have that protector instinct to rights that men want. So there'll be a slower evolution in that process, but that will be the next significant demographic change. We've already seen a jump in the demographic of single fathers from being 10% 10 years ago to being 19% today. So that's already a significant demographic trend.
Well, there we're going to have to stop. We mentioned it once again that our guest, Warren Farrell, does have a number of books in print. You can find him in the library at the bookstore, the most recent Father and Child Reunion. Also, he does have a website with information about him and his publications and so forth, and a way to email him if you would like. And a website address, very easy. It's www.warrenfarrell, which is his name, 4 R's, 2 L's, warrenfarrell.com. Dr. Farrell, thanks very much for talking with us.
Thank you. It's very, very nice talking with you. You ask good questions and you give good listening space as well.
Oh, thanks.